Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another edition of Turned Out a Punk. I'm your host, Damien Abraham, and once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved with punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, not one, but two guests, one returning, one debuting. Returning to the show, you may know him from United Nations and from the Love Kills and from a very early lineup of Committed, as we talk about every single time I speak to him. Jonah Bayer is back on the show and also making her debut on the show. You may know her from Saturday Night Live or tons of movies. I love that for you. Like a lot of amazing stuff. Vanessa Bayer is also on the show. Together, they host the fantastic podcast, How Did We Get Weird? Very excited for you to hear this one, and I will let you hear it in 1 second. But first, if you want to get in touch with this podcast, you can head over to the email address, turnedoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother and the show producer and guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham, and he will get the message to me. See, siblings doing it on the podcast world. That's what we're doing right here. You can also find me on, I don't really check these things. I deleted both these apps, so but you can still find me on Twitter, theoretically, and Instagram. You can find this podcast on Instagram. There's a Facebook page. There's a TikTok page. There's a YouTube page, all for this podcast. All those can be found at Turn It A Punk on those platforms. If you want to support the show, tell all your friends about it. Let them all know that you enjoy this podcast and that you find it interesting and they should check it out too. You can also check out the band I play in. We are called Fucked Up. You can find out more information at fuckedup.cc. We've got two more shows, and then that's it for the foreseeable future. Hopefully we'll see you on December 19th in Toronto at the Great Hall. It's, I think there's still tickets available. And after that, we're playing in the Yukon. So there's not going to be a lot of opportunities. So if you're around Toronto, come see us and say hello. Get the last hug type thing. We also have two new records, Someday and Another Day. If you want to get a Turn It A Punk Another Day limited vinyl pressing, a Turn It A Punk pressing, you can find that over at Emissions Records in Toronto. They have a webpage as well. And that is it. All right, on to today's show. As I said off the top, two amazing guests are here. Jonah returning to the show and bringing his little sister along with him. Vanessa Bayer making her debut on the podcast. This is a super fun episode. If you have not listened to the first appearance of Jonah, which I threw back up on the feed as a Turn It A Punk classic, it's in the feed just before this one. Check that one out. A lot of great stories in it as well. Some of them are repeated here, very few. And it's a good kind of like lead up to this episode. So check that one out. And my gosh, this is a lot of fun. There's some questions that have been burning in my mind for years that I get resolved on this episode. So I'm very happy about that. Check out their podcast, How Did We Get Weird? A very fun, very cool podcast. And Jonah's been doing podcasts forever and going off track and the Search Party podcast, and, you know, to see them come together and make this podcast as a part of a sibling duo myself, it's an awesome thing. And there's so many great guests and a real fun podcast. As they say in this episode, a great companion podcast to Turned Out a Punk. Man, I love these two. There's nothing more to say. I'm not going to ramble on. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Vanessa and Jonah Bayer on Turned Out a Punk. Jonah, welcome back to the podcast. Vanessa, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Very excited to be here.
Well, Jonah, you were one of the original guests, and yeah. Your episode will be back in the feed by this point, just ahead of this episode. But I went back and listened to it, and I sound like I'm on cocaine. So I promise you I'll be a lot more sedate than I was back then.
I'm scared to listen to it. I remember we talked a lot about Moist, maybe. Did we talk about?
We did talk about Moist. We did push just a little too late.
Yes.
With that conversation. And I think it's the only time in the 10 years since we've had that conversation that Moist has come up on this podcast. And which, believe me, as we talked back then, I am not afraid to discuss the work of Moist, because they are, I guess they're like the Canadian Bruce Springsteen. I don't know. I'm trying to think of looking at it. Definitely not the Bruce Springsteen. Maybe the Canadian... they're better. Sublime, I was going to say, but that's not really an equivalent.
I was going to say Collective Soul or something, maybe.
Damn, you nailed it. Yeah.
When did they have their heyday?
I would say like 94 or something like that. Yeah.
I wonder if they named themselves that, because it's like to me, it feels like a very 90s thing to be like, ugh, I hate the word Moist. Do you remember how everyone would be like, this is my least favorite word. It's such a gross word. And that was like such a thing.
But everyone said it. Yeah.
Yeah. And people would be like, oh, please don't say Moist. It's such a gross word. Like it feels like so 90s to call yourself Moist, because it's like, guess what? That's our name. So deal with it.
I don't know. I think it might have gotten even like, become a more despised word now. Maybe it's just because I'm like listening to too much John Worster, and I know that's like a a word that drives him up the wall.
I actually saw, I don't know if we talked about this podcast, I saw Moist at a festival in Cleveland outdoors at Nautica. Panzy Division played, and they were making Moist jokes, and then Green Day was supposed to play on the Dookie era, and it got shut down, too many people, and they wouldn't let him play.
Yeah, it seems like that Dookie tour started at one level with Green Day, and by the time it was done, Green Day was just on another trajectory. But that's so funny to kind of think of Moist and Panzer Division existing in the same universe, let alone on the same stage at some point.
Yeah, those radio festivals in the 90s, it was like anything goes.
Yeah, and I think also we talked about this last time too, but like the Cleveland proximity to Canada, you guys had a real Agent of Chaos playing with your music tastes.
Yes, very much.
I don't think people realize how European like Canadian music and Canadian music culture is until you kind of like look at it as it's not, it's like America, but just sort of like askew a little bit.
Yes. Yes.
Were the Hip big for you guys at all? The Tragically Hip?
Yes. Wait, what was their big song?
In America, Ahead by the Century might have been big. I'm trying to think what are there some Bob Cajun was.
Were they
one?
Kind of like, I think that they were big. Were they kind of like what's the band I'm trying to think of? Were they kind of like Toad the Wet Sprocket?
Oh, man. They are the Canadian Bruce Springsteen. So to hear our Canadian Bruce Springsteen reduce a tone on the Wet Sprocket, I would say probably you could definitely lump them in together. I think if you weren't Canadian, you probably might be like, oh, yeah, they're part of that same world. But I think across the border here, they were the band that was like oppressively popular when I was a kid in high school. Like I hated them in high school.
I mean, I got to say this. I just want to be clear. I love Toad the Wet Sprocket, and I used to listen to them a lot. So that was a compliment.
And I didn't mean to diss Toad the Wet Sprocket either. I'm just saying the magnitude of the Hip in Canada might
Right.
Toad the Wet Sprocket.
They were bigger in Canada than maybe Toad the Wet Sprocket was in the U.S.
I think so. I see. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel
I guess there weren't a ton of toadies out there. Toadies are something different.
Toadheads. Toadies, different band. Yeah.
And the band is Toadies.
Toadies is another band. Yeah, Toadies is like, do you wanna die down out?
Oh yeah, yeah, that's Toadies. And what are their fans called? They already took their fan. They took their fan name as their name. Toadies is.
Yeah, well, you, maybe you'd call yourself a
Toadies like heads.
Toadies. Toadstools.
Toadstools.
Yeah,
is good.
That's good. That's
we're the
good.
Stools.
And then what are fans of Toad the Wet Sprocket? Sprockets.
Sprocket heads.
Sprockets.
Sprocket sockets.
Yeah.
How often does Toad the Wet Sprocket come up on this podcast? Probably not a lot.
Not a lot. But Toadies have definitely come up on this podcast because we've actually had a member of the Toadies on this
podcast. Well, Zach's brother is in Toadies, right?
Exactly. You know. Yes. Yeah. So the Zach Blair, a friend of the show, and his brother Donnie is a friend of the show as well. And Vanessa, I will not bore you with this right now, but the greatest story to ever happen on this podcast was we reconnected Zach Blair with the professional wrestler MVP, who at one point in their lives saved the band The Misfits from being murdered by the Macho Man Randy Savage.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot to process.
And by murdered, we mean like wrestling murdered.
No, he was going to murder them. I think the more you find him with the Macho Man Randy Savage.
Like on a stage, like no, in real life.
In real life, yeah. The wrestling world backstage was terrified of the Macho Man Randy Savage because he had a bit of a temper.
Whoa. And
his fiance, Gorgeous George, who eventually would become Gorgeous George Von Frankenstein, ran off with Doyle Von Frankenstein from the Misfits during the Misfits run in WCW. And then the Macho Man...
In real life, not on stage.
No. Okay. No. And then the Macho Man traveled America looking for the Misfits, where he would show up seemingly just always after they left, but he'd come in and be like, where's Dooley? Where the fuck is Dooley?
It being recorded? I'm so sorry. I'm so obsessed with the performance aspect of this. Was it being recorded? Was he filming himself doing that?
No, this was for the stage of, but or an audience of one himself. Like he was living the gimmick by this point.
Yeah. Doyle's not the guy I would go after. He's a pretty ripped dude.
I will say the only time Doyle, when he was on the podcast, showed any vulnerability was when he brought up wrestling at the end and told me that it was real. He's like, yo, don't let them fucking fool you. They are really tough guys, really scary guys.
Wow.
And this was before I knew the whole story. And then once I found out the story, I'm like, oh, that was coming from a real learned place.
It's interesting that Macho Man Randy Savage was able to get so much success with that temper. Like, it seems like at a certain point, I wonder if he would reach that level of success today.
Wrestling has changed, but wrestling makes the scarier, sketchier sides of music look downright positive by comparison.
Right.
Backstage. Right. It is a very intense.
I guess wrestling, if like you're still, if it, wrestling is sort of a nostalgic thing, like I wonder if it doesn't quite update with the times the way other industries do.
Oh man, we're going down some paths. I'm sorry, I don't mean to lead you guys down here. But wrestling is another thing that I've spent time obsessed with. And
yes.
It's kind of, I think, like an outlaw culture. Like the whole thing's built on a deception of the audience. Like the whole thing was a work, right? So the audience is definitely not beloved by the performers. Like the barrier, like, you know, in punk, and I get, even in comedy, it seems like this on a certain level. It's almost like you meet someone, you're like, here, let me show you how to get into this thing. Like, let me bring you under my wing. In wrestling, it's like, oh, you want to get involved in this thing? I'm going to break your leg to teach you that it's real and that you should stay the hell away. Like the first time Hulk Hogan got trained, they broke his legs when Hulk Hogan tried to get trained as a wrestler.
Yeah, well, twice. That's what I do to aspiring comedians.
Yes, we got it.
You want to be in comedy? I'm going to break your legs. So you better run away. And then if they don't, then That's so many people, how so many young comedians get their start.
Yeah, I think that's what music's like too, right? Like the first time, like Joan and I, you know, when we wanted to get up there on stage, we asked our heroes. They punched us in the face as hard as they could.
Yep, that's how we did it.
Like, get the hell away from here. Well, we have gone down some digressions, and we haven't even started this thing yet. So, Jonah, you've been asked this question. So, Vanessa, I will turn it over to you on this one.
Okay.
How'd you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across the genre?
Definitely related to Jonah. I guess I'd say I was inundated with punk culture living in our house. I just want to paint you a picture of what it looked like walking into Jonah's room. He moved into the downstairs guest bedroom. Nobody quite knows why. I guess we could ask him. He's right here. But I think it's because it had an ensuite bathroom. Is that fair, Jonah?
Yes. Also easier to sneak in and out. You had a window.
Oh, right.
You could go in and out. Yeah.
Because there was a door there. It's so funny. This is the first time that even occurred to me. I never snuck out the whole time we were kids and in high school. And you probably were sneaking out all the time. Okay.
I don't know.
He's not going to answer.
I think the statute of limitation on sneaking out is way higher.
Okay. So Jonah's room, this is what it looked like. There were just punk like band posters everywhere. I don't want to leave this out. Above the pull-out bed, which was like the sofa slash bed that was, you know, meant for a guest, but became Jonah's full-time bed. There was the American flag that we used to have hanging outside of our house. Jonah put it up on his wall upside down. So that really made a strong statement when you walked into his room. And then if you looked literally anywhere else in the room at any of the other walls, you would see, you know, that like Misfits poster where it's a bunch of pigs and they're about to eat a human.
No, that's NoFX is a liberal animation.
Oh, I'm so sorry. And as we are kind of, I feel bad because I have now through Jonah met NoFX, and I feel bad that I got that mixed up. The NoFX poster where it's a bunch of pigs eating human. I guess the image stayed in my mind more than the name because the image was so grotesque and horrifying for my teenage self. Then there was like, there were just like posters everywhere of all these like, Misfits, NoFX, like Sex Pistols, like just stuff kind of everywhere. And then if you left the house and got into Jonah's car, which used to be our grandma's car, it was like this white, I can't remember.
Honda Accord.
The back of the car, which had not been very punk when our grandma drove it, had turned into like a bunch of bumper stickers for different punk bands. And then when Jonah would drive me to school, usually make me late, he would be blasting like NoFX or other bands. And actually that was the only of these three things I'm naming for you, his room, the bumper stickers, and driving to school, blasting the music. The one that I liked the most was blasting the music because I did feel it made me look very cool when we showed up in the parking lot.
Yeah. NoFX definitely was like, it was funny. Cause like now it's, I like play it for my kids and I realize it's like, oh, this would be like when my parents played me the Beatles. No other way than it's temporally that different between that.
Yeah.
But it is truly like weird to think of that as at a time of it being kind of the new music that was happening. Like I remember the sheep poster with the guy 69ing with the sheep and just the NoFX vibe around that time, just being like so edgy. And here we are, they're retiring now.
It was just like those posters. It was just like, we don't have to go this far. Like it just felt like
the liberal animation poster, and it was huge. And that's like an interesting thing to be like staring at every night.
Yes, it is.
Was that in your room, Jonah?
Yeah.
I think I might have blocked it out. Like it was just like so much, just his room was so much to take in.
Yeah.
I remember my brother, we went to a show and he had gotten the NoFX promotional item for that record, which was an inflatable sex toy of a sheep that was stickered NoFX liberal animation or something. Or no, sorry.
No, that was Heavy
Petting Zoo. And I remember him walking around this thing at 12 years old. The record store gave it to him. Someone had taken the sheep, to be fair, at the record store for God only knows what. But it was just the box of this very obvious sex toy sheep branded for NOFX.
It's a weird, that is a weird record. I think even in the discography, it is like so kind of dark and kind of different.
Liberal Animation or
no, Heavy Petting Zoo.
Heavy Petting Zoo. Yeah, it is. It's almost like, I guess it's them kind of rejecting fame as it's kind of being offered to them.
Yeah.
Like in the post Green Day, post Offspring world, they put out this record that, yeah, is there? There's a lot of like weird songs on it. You're right. There's not necessarily a lot of like obvious hits, especially coming off the last record before it. And it is. They're definitely a band that. Have you heard that? Have you read the audiobook or read it? Have you read the audiobook? Have you listened to the audiobook that they did?
I read it when it came out. We did. Yeah, I read it when it came out, but I haven't listened to the audiobook.
The audiobook's amazing. They get Tommy Chong and Jello Biafra to play the two members that aren't in the band anymore.
Wow.
But just hearing them tell that story. I don't know if you've read this book, Vanessa, the NOFX one.
I haven't. I probably won't.
It's the most upsetting music book ever. Like,
well, you're selling it.
I'm telling you.
It's... No, I should read it. I've been lucky enough with Jonah to meet those guys several times, and they're so nice. And I should read the book, but I don't read. I should read more books in general or listen to more audiobooks. And I guess if I'm going to start it, if I'm being honest, it won't be with that.
Should be with a NOFX one. It feels like a roller coaster ride because the first half of the book, it's like the drummer's battle with heroin being like the main, you know, obstacle in the band's path. And then just when he kicks that heroin problem, don't worry, this is not a spoiler because it's only halfway through the book, Fat Mike discovers cocaine at 40 and the ride begins all over again.
Yeah, I gotta say, I saw him in New York over the summer. When they did So Long Thanks for All the Shoes, The Decline, and I think White Trash. And they didn't do the full albums. They played like selected songs out of order. But I think they sounded like maybe the best I've ever heard them. Like they sounded so good. It was really impressive. Yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely on another level in terms of like professional, like on stage, not the banter in between the songs, but like when the songs start, no matter how fucked up they are or he is, they're able to kind of pull it together. And yeah, like I've seen them play unbelievable sets. Like they'll play the Decline song, which is like what, 15 minutes without stopping.
Yeah. But it was a lot. Yeah. I listened to a lot of them in high school. So Vanessa was exposed to a lot of that stuff kind of by default.
Yeah.
But you said like, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, I like to think it's made me a little punk, but, you know, again, kind of working at a different level than Jonah in terms of that.
But what do you think when, you know, Jonah, because Jonah wrote one of my all-time favorite articles, pieces of journalism about music, about growing up, getting into Cleveland hardcore as this, like, little kid surrounded by these giant, overweight, might be a way to put it, men. At the time. And I just was wondering, like, what was your impression of, here's your, like, you know, brother getting involved in this music, then all of a sudden he's now hanging out with like grown ass adults?
I thought it was weird and I hated it. Here's the thing. There's these two huge guys, and we might have to take this out because I don't know. There's these two huge guys in their 20s. Okay. They're going into our basement with Jonah, our unfinished shitty basement, which like, I don't know. I guess that was to my parents' credit. They were like, if you're going to practice, just go down there. Just don't do it. Okay. So they're going into our basement and playing so loud. Like literally it would be like, I'm trying to study. I'm trying to do my homework upstairs. They're in the basement two floors down. And these guys are like, just like playing so loud. And it's like, okay, here's an idea. You're in your 20s. Get a job. Leave this teenager alone. I know Jonah's going to defend
it's
them.
It's tough.
But...
Right. You got to be loud enough to hear stuff over the drums. And we didn't have it
really
soundproofed.
Loud drums.
But, you know, this Damien, again, this is like something that comes up. I know you talk about this all the time on the podcast. Like, it didn't seem that weird to be hanging out with adults as a kid during that time in this kind of music.
No, it's the only place where I think this kind of relationship is completely normal and not always, but generally fairly innocent in punk
yes.
rock and positive too. But that doesn't make it any less terrifying to look at from the outside.
And it was just like, these guys are so big. They're so young. And I think I might have made this up, Jonah, but I thought they were vegan or something.
No, they're No, I mean, some people were, but yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah. But well, either way, they would always be in our basement just screaming. And, you know, and by screaming, I mean like playing music that sounds like screaming. And so, yeah. Yeah, I wasn't crazy about it.
What was the first concert you remember going to? Or show even?
Of Jonah's?
Yeah, or just like, yeah, what show that Jonah brought you to, or even show that you chose to go to on your own?
This is a very sweet story. Jonah won tickets to Lilith Fair on the radio, and he took me. And that was my jam, was, you know, Tori Amos, Sarah McLachlan, you know, Jewel. So Jonah took me to Lilith Fair, and that was like my first concert. And it was Jonah's first time having a cappuccino, famously. There's a cappuccino machine there. And this was, you know, like the mid to late 90s, it was like cappuccinos were very fancy and people were just starting to get into them. You know, before that, it had been sort of isolated to Italy.
Very European.
Vanessa would come see my bands play in high school, and we would play at this place in Cleveland, play at the Euclid Tavern. And
yes.
I remember us playing with like the Dropkick Murphys on there, you know, really early on. Like, Damien, I don't know if you know, there's like a Dropkick Murphys Oxymoron split 7-inch.
Oh, I know that 7-inch very well.
Yeah, yeah. So my band played a show at the Euclid Tavern in high school, and we're on it because it's all like flyers.
Wait, this is pre-committed?
Whoa.
Pre-committed, yeah.
I didn't know if we talked about this last time.
Yeah, I mean, this was like a band in high school that didn't really... I'd never played outside of Cleveland.
So were you guys kind of like an Oi street punk band?
No, not at all. It was like very influenced by Integrity. Like,
oh, amazing.
Yeah, it probably would be up your alley. It probably, but yeah. And then it's funny because I know you talked about Committed because... Ned from Title Fight texted me and he was like, I hadn't talked to him in a while. And he's like, you weren't committed? And I was like, kind of like the earliest incarnation practice in my parents' basement. And he was very impressed.
Once in a while, I'll bust something out. And, you know, most of the time when I start going on my weird, you know, ADHD rants about punk and connecting stuff, people eyes gloss over, especially people that have known me for a long time. So when I did that SNL video connecting Vanessa to Committed through you, I got a lot of texts from a lot of friends that day. A lot of people were very blown away. And Committed, I feel like, is on the cusp of a major cultural moment in hardcore. Like, there's a reissue in the works, right?
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if I'm announcing things before they should be announced, but there's a reissue in the works. There's like, I don't think I did it in time, but I was asked to commit some liner notes to it. But I failed to, but I do have, since we've talked, acquired a Committed demo right here. Also a Grudge Match demo. Cause I don't think we talked about Grudge Match last time.
No, it's so funny. Yeah. Cause you were talking about them with Grudge Match and I was like, I didn't realize people outside of Cleveland knew about Grudge Match. And it's so funny because, you know, I think you also know the guys who do for 7-Inch Club. And
yes.
They did an episode on Grudge Match and they like sent me, they're like, you're thanked in this record. And I was like, I had no idea. I didn't know. But yeah, yeah, there's Grudge Match was great too. I barely remember Grudge Match. I think that was right when I was like going away to college. But
Committed, it was funny because like Committed played a huge role in the development of my kind of era of Toronto hardcore. Like they came up here and played with As We Once Were, which became No Warning, and Walls Around Us, which became Fucked Up. Excuse me. And like, I remember going, actually, this is weird. And now this is my ADHD brain going, get ready for this, guys. I remember going with them to this restaurant called New Ho King, which was like at the time, a very obscure Chinese restaurant, and we took them there and they loved it. I remember sitting there with them and talking for hours and hours about Cleveland hardcore and Youth Crew hardcore and all this stuff. And yeah, it was a very key moment in the scene here in Toronto. And New Ho King finally became famous this year because it was mentioned by Kendrick Lamar in the diss track on both of our mutual friend, Drake. That's the restaurant.
Yes. Now I'm back in. Vanessa, I was kind of like, what are you talking about?
Vanessa, I knew it was going around to get back somewhere.
Vanessa, you remember John Millen, right? He worked with me at AP. Yeah. You'd remember John. Yeah, he was around a lot. But yeah, he was in Committed. That might help.
So, and what in the so you made a video obviously actress kind of focused on myself. You made a video that connected me to the through Jonah to Committed.
Yeah, I made a series of the history of SNL punk, like the connection between dating back, cuz they both start in 75, kind of 6 months apart from each other.
Wow.
Like Patti Smith and Television play this series of shows at CBGB's, which is kind of like the birth of New York punk. And then 6 months later at Halloween, like SNL premieres. And then like the first truly great performance musically on SNL is Patti Smith performing on there.
Wow.
But then they start dissing Patti Smith like a week later in skits with Candy Slice, which is Hilda Radner doing a very fucked up version of Patti Smith. And, you know, then the Elvis Costello performance, right, where he changes the song. According to legend, Lorne's just standing off camera giving Elvis the middle finger the whole time through the performance. And then Fear and, you know, just sort of, and then there's all these weird connections like yourself or Fred being.
Fred, I was going to say, I mean, Fred, yeah.
Yeah, punk and hardcore bands. But then like weirder stuff like The Hands in Mr. Bill. Were the Hands were belonging to Vance DeGeneres, which is Ellen's brother, but he was the bass player in this New Orleans power pop punk band called The Cold.
Did she have more than one brother?
I think she only has the one, right?
I had a meeting with him. I had like a general meeting with him once, and I was so mad at my agents because they didn't tell me if he was Ellen's brother. And so I had the meeting, and I remember I was like, he's got to be like, he kind of looks like her and his last name is DeGeneres. How many people have that last name?
Not a common name.
But yeah. I didn't want to be like, you know, like your sister, you know what I mean? So then afterwards, my agents were like, I was like, is that Ellen's brother? And they were like, yeah. Or maybe he mentioned it at the end. And it in kind of a way that I felt like I should have known. Anyway, I think I had a meeting with, he's like a producer now?
He's a producer. Yeah. He was one of the original SNL writers, I think, like first season kind of thing.
My agents should have told me all of this, by the way, not with them anymore.
Well, they need to look at my TikTok videos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I wish that I had Fred's appreciation of music because I think it would have made me even more like in awe of all the musical acts and stuff that were at SNL when I was there, but kind of the thing I was really lucky about was having Jonah, who came to like probably half of the shows I did while I was on SNL. And Jonah was really would tell me, you know, like if it was like a big musical moment or whatever. And also the bands a lot of the time knew Jonah, and it was the time that I would like revert to being Jonah's sister. You know, like I was always Jonah's sister when we were growing up. And then I got an SNL, but then like the bands would still see me as Jonah's sister a lot because they would know Jonah and they'd be like, oh, you're Jonah's sister. This would be like, yeah, that's kind of where I'm the most comfortable, I think, too.
Well, it's funny, too, because I guess you guys, you know, work together on Sound Advice and.
Yeah.
And like going through the artists that were on there, you pick some winners, you know.
That's
like
how we met NoFX.
Yeah, because they were on there, like the Drake one, Haim. Like, there's a
really
cool like list to kind of go back through, and like I was rewatching a bunch of them today, including
that's
the.
That's so nice.
Well, like it's funny because like it is one of those things where bands are like so awkward to deal with.
Yeah.
And to see the band have to be on and to be funny and just to see you kind of like keep it funny is amazing to watch.
Some of them were so funny. I mean, And Jonah and I would write a lot of the jokes together, and then Jonah would get so nervous. The one that we always, you know, the example we always use is when we had Amy Mann and Ted Leo on, because they were in, you know, that group, The Both. And we wrote these jokes about their age, and Jonah, we wrote one joke.
We wrote a joke that was like, are you guys called The Both because you're both about to file for Social Security?
Yeah, eligible to file.
And
yeah,
we wrote it, and I was like, oh, this is funny. And then we got there and met them, and I was like, I don't know these people, and like, I respect them a lot, and this feels like I can't deal with this. And so I just like left. I was like, I gotta go.
Yeah, Jonah didn't.
But I don't have to actually say it.
I'm the one who had to actually like say these jokes. And sometimes they were like really insulting. And of course, we wouldn't have written them if we thought that those people wouldn't, you know, we obviously they were not based in reality, but like people were really good. I feel like in
people
general,
were good
people
sports,
were really good
but,
sports.
But you
and
know,
we got to have, yeah.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, I don't know if anyone knows this, but we actually were developing it into like a TV show.
Yeah.
And wrote, we had with this writer, Pete Schultz, who worked for SNL, and we had like a script and like sort of like a deal almost, and it kind of fell through at the last minute, but we were going to actually make it into like a half hour show.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Awesome.
This web series that we're, for listeners who aren't familiar with it, it's like I play this condescending media coach who is like coaching bands on how to like improve their image. And yeah, we wanted to turn it into a half hour show, but you know, Hollywood.
That's Hollywood. Hollywood.
What was your experience working with Drake like? Because my experience around that same era, a little rough.
I loved him. He was so nice. I got to meet his mom, his Jewish mom. She was so nice. Backstage, she probably doesn't remember, whatever. But I just found him to be really... I found him to be genuinely funny and really sweet. And I loved having him there. And then when we did Sound Advice with him, first of all, we couldn't believe that he came and did it. Like, we couldn't believe we
got
him.
Vanessa was like, I'm going to text Drake and get, and I was like, uh-huh. And then like, he showed up with like one or two other people.
Two friends.
Yeah. Like super low key. Came in, we were like, okay, we can, we'll get you in and out of here. He's like, no, I can stay. And he was, had such good timing, was so funny. It was like, yeah.
The other thing that I'll never forget is we were like in this theater, we were in a different space than we normally recorded in. And his friends were in the audience watching, and his friends were laughing so hard. It was like these guys who like kind of were like, they were like, they weren't talking a lot when they first came in. It was like a little bit like intimidating. These like kind of like quiet guys kind of just like looking around. And then once we started filming, they were laughing so hard at every, I mean, it was like the most charming group. And he was so funny. And so much of the stuff that I say to him, if he didn't have a good sense of humor, he would have, you know, he was just like such a good sport. We had a great experience with him and with his friends, honestly.
Damn, I did not expect it to go there. Yeah. My experience was not the same.
I tried to text him since, and I think he must have changed his number, but whatever.
I think it's funny too, because I think the protocol to interview him now has changed so much. Well, I guess content and the value of content has changed.
Yeah, it probably has nothing to do with me that I can't reach him. It's like probably like no one can reach him. Like you have to reach out by a different way.
Yeah, that's what I promised. That's it. He didn't give me his number at all at any point. There was no point where he's like, okay, dude, I want you to hit me up after this is over. Just stay in touch. But that's fine. What were some of the local bands that you were into back then, Vanessa? Like, I was trying to think, like, even Jonah, who were some of like the non-Cleveland hardcore bands of that era? Like, I got a Cleveland record box right behind me of just Cleveland 7-inches, and all of it is pretty hard.
Well, Jonah, you used to play guitar with Margot Breslin, who was our neighbor.
I played guitar with this other high school student named Margot Breslin, and she played this is at the Tori Amos era, and she played piano and was like really popular in like our community, and we played on like the morning news. But I had like a shaved head and like, you know, like and you know, I'd be wearing like an Integrity hoodie or like a Dare shirt or something. But yeah, I used to play in the news with Mark. What's funny is I actually was working at Kids R Us.
All right.
Didn't go into work because I had to play in the morning news. Made like lied, said I was sick, and then went in the next day and they were like, Jonah, we saw you on the news yesterday. And I was like, oh yeah. And I basically got fired. I was like, they were basically like, you don't need to keep coming in. And I was like, okay. Yeah.
And Jonah could have just said why he was. I
It
mean,
was,
we've talked about this. Why didn't he
yeah.
just tell them the truth and
It's
say,
one of
can I
those
have a
things
day?
when you're like 17 or 18, you just do stuff and like you just don't think about it. You're just like, I guess I'll just make something up for no reason that I'll easily get caught. And it just, things aren't connecting.
It's so crazy because by that time you had definitely had seen the episode of Saved by the Bell where Zach Morris does the same thing where he says he needs to not go into school because it's a Jewish holiday, and then they see him on TV catch at a baseball game catching a baseball.
Yeah.
I think now that I have a teenager who's around that age, it's just part of the natural development, like Jonah's saying, because he'll lie to me in things that I'm like, why would you bother
Yeah,
even
you're
wasting?
like, I know.
there's just no reason. You
It's
just
not
tell
worth,
the truth.
yeah.
It's so much easier. And also, like, that's not a big deal.
Yeah, like just things that like you're very clearly going to get caught in this situation.
You know, it's funny is that the local band, the first band I spent a lot of time with was this band called Trip. And it was my guitar teacher's band.
Ooh.
And the logo, the T and the P made a mushroom, and the I was a joint. And they were like, they covered a lot of that, like Cream and like a lot of like that kind of Nuggets type stuff. Like I Can Hear the Grass Grow and all this stuff I didn't really recognize at the time. But they would just like take me around with them when I was like 15. And I would like just kind of hang out with them. And again, they were older than me.
Was this the teacher that the guitar teacher that mom was like, you can't come here, you can't go here anymore?
No, this was, I went to one when I first got this, my Les Paul, I got a Les Paul Studio, and I'm pretty sure it was stolen. And I got it from the store in Cleveland that I think my mom basically got tipped off. It was like a drug front, essentially. And it was, this place was, the lessons were in the basement. And it was like an unfinished basement. I remember it was this guy who would just chain smoke and like teach me like seek and destroy. But then I moved and I got lessons from this really great teacher, Dave Baker, who I think is in Nashville now, and he was in Trip. And that was sort of my first exposure. And then from there later, I got into, yeah, more like the Beatnik Termites and like more, you know, and then like whatever, Committed, Set Straight, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Jonah, what about Agatha Krall?
Agatha Krall was one of our dad's business partner's son's bands. No, our
No,
dad's
no.
business partner's,
Band.
yeah, our dad business partner's band, yes. And they were more of like a,
I
maybe
think our
more of
dad
it.
wanted to be their manager. And
Yeah.
I think he, I'm sure, I don't know how much, but I'm sure he invested money. Like, I'm sure he invested money in them. And the only, I'm not, you know, I'm sure that there's this one song that they had called Nobody Told Me that our dad used to really come home from work and sing a lot.
Yeah,
Kind of catchy.
they were more like, I would say more Candlebox-y, I would
I
say.
would,
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say they more in the Candlebox genre. I think that's right.
Because there is like that other parallel scene in the mid-80s in Cleveland, like that St. Valentine's Records kind of scene with Death of Samantha and Cobra Verde and
Yep.
I guess Guided by Voices would be, you know, a little bit further down in Dayton, but kind of part of that scene a little bit later on.
Yeah, I didn't know as much about that, but I w was in a band, the Love Kill, and our bass player Carla, her husband Rob was in a band called Ethernet, and they were kind of, I think they did a split with Cobra Verde, and I knew those guys were a little older than me, but I knew about that stuff, and I know me and Vanessa are friends, became friends later with Dave Hill, and so he kind of, I know he's involved in a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, it's like it's interesting because like it's such a musical city, like Cleveland, and like there's that. Have you seen that book? Oh, here it is. Have you seen this thing? Ain't It Fun?
No.
By Aaron Lang. It's
No.
a comic book biography of Peter Lawner, and
Okay.
but it's like incredible, but the history of this and like the amount of people that have come into play in the history of Cleveland music, it's incredible.
Wow. Yeah.
Everyone, and Chrissy Hynde to Robert Crumb to it's a unbelievable book, but like it really does kind of make Cleveland come across almost as like this, you know, cursed mythical kind of place for music.
Well, it's interesting because Vanessa and I, you know, we grew up in the suburbs, but even our high school, like J.D. Sampson went to our high school. She was like,
yeah,
or she was a year or two older than me. And like we went to a Marilyn Manson like signing at like a piercing shop together in high school. And
I had no idea. Still, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We still keep in touch with J.D. They're awesome. But yeah, we all went to the same high school, but we didn't really go to shows together or anything. I think JD got into that stuff maybe a little later.
Well, cause like, especially the stuff that you get into is like this really specific deep head kind of like world unto itself, like hardcore. And especially at that time was not like, it's interesting. We just played this festival in Manchester the other day and it's like thousands of kids pulling Stage Invasions to like sing along to these hardcore bands. And hardcore in the 90s was not like that. Like, it was not necessarily a very popular type of music back then.
No. And we, you know, United Nations, we played a show with Fucked Up at like one of these skate and surf festivals. I don't know if you remember. I remember you were singing on top of like a half pipe or something.
Oh, yeah. That was like in Toronto, was it? Or the Toronto Island?
I don't remember where was it. Could have been in Jersey. Did you guys ever play one of the? I remember. I have photos.
Yes,
of
we
you.
Did play Jersey. Okay. Yeah, like some one of those weird skate festivals, like right on the shore. Yes, I do remember that.
We played one. I think we played right before you or something.
Yeah, that was. I remember meeting a guy in the parking lot. And he's like, "Do you want to smoke some weed?" And I'm like, "Sure." And we went in the van and smoked dabs out of this very scary looking crack pipe device looking thing, but it was. That was a lot of fun. That's probably why I don't remember being on top of a skate
ramp. Probably. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, I'm trying to think, Vanessa, Vanessa was into Bad Religion in high school, for sure.
Yeah, there were some bands that like I kind of liked that Jonah liked. Like, I liked Bad Religion. I liked Rancid. Kind of like the more, like, not that Bad Religion was mainstream, but the bands that you would kind of sometimes hear on the radio, I sort of liked. Yeah, and I liked going to Jonah's concerts. I would sort of dress up. I'd kind of try to like wear all black and look kind of punk, and just kind of try to stand like as far as I could from the stage, so I didn't get like pushed by anyone, you know, in like a moshing way, not in like a, you know, aggressive way.
Yeah.
But but yeah, some of those bands that were more like popular, I liked, and I, you know, I feel like. There were bands that we both liked, like we both liked Green Day and Nirvana. There were like bands like that that were more popular that I liked.
You weren't into Rancid, Jonah?
I was into Rancid.
Oh, you were
into,
okay.
Yeah, I saw him on the Outcome the Wolves tour with the Lunatics. That was a
and
big
Jonah
one.
Interviewed them for AP Magazine once, I remember. And there was like this cover story with Tim Armstrong on the cover. And I might still have it. Like I remember.
I don't think I
like,
wrote that story, but I think that was kind of an iconic cover for the magazine.
Yeah, it was a really good cover, and I guess I just
you assumed I wrote it.
In history that
I
you
wish
wrote
I did.
It, but...
I did not. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't have known about it if you didn't work there.
Just write his bio for him. It doesn't matter.
And and I used to go into like Borders and like other bookstores and move the AP magazines to the front when Jonah started working there. Because I was like, people got to buy these magazines. This is the one to buy.
It's only years later that I realized that Ryan from Hardball was the editor at AP Magazine, right? For a while? Or an editor there? Ryan Downey?
From Fastball?
Yeah, from Hardball.
Do you remember Fastball?
Yeah, Vanessa, so this is like a punk podcast.
Fastball.
So Fastball, okay. Toad the Wet Sprocket. This is not exactly.
Toad the Wet Sprocket, I think more than Fastball. I think.
But Jonah,
over
do you remember what Fastball sang? It's a pretty good song.
Yeah, the Way, right?
The Way.
The Way, yes.
Yeah. Although sometimes I get them confused with that other band that sang Closing Time.
Stereophonics?
Semisonic.
Good. Right. Those songs came out at the same time. They get confused a lot. And I think I met our stage manager at SNL, Jenna. She used to work at MTV. She used to work on like the Jon Stewart show and stuff and Remote Control. She was friends with the lead singer of Fastball, I think, but it might have been Semisonic because but I'm pretty sure it was Fastball. Either way, two great songs, and I know it's a punk podcast, Jonah. But...
was G. Smith still at SNL when you were there?
No, it was this guy Lenny who is still there, was kind of in charge of the band. And I'm like, is it am I right?
Yeah. When the Replacements played on SNL, they said that the only person that was nice to them was G. Smith. And
really?
Yeah, they said they were the only two people that came to say hi to them.
G. Smith was married to someone like. My phone was updating. Oh God, I got to go through a whole thing now.
He did play in a punk band called Roger C. Real and the Rue Morgue in 78 too. G. Smith.
I didn't know that. You know, Vanessa actually, I think, probably saw Tommy Stinson because we did see Guns N' Roses once in Cleveland with Buckethead era GNR, and I'm pretty sure it was Tommy Stinson on bass.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
My phone's being so annoying.
I read recently that Buckethead has something like 700 albums.
Yeah, I know he has a lot. The thing I remember most about the show was Axl was like, Buckethead wants to express himself, and he did a nunchuck solo. He just like started, pulled out these nunchucks and just started doing this weird like robot dance with the nunchucks. It was so awesome.
You know how they did that thing years ago where they released like. Every time they pressed record with the Stooges Funhouse. So it's like like hours of just like half attempts at songs and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I want them to do that with the Chinese Democracy Sessions.
Oh man.
Because Shaq rapped on a song at one point.
Really? Yeah, we were actually at the show. It was the one show that the Eagles of Death Metal played before they got kicked off. That was a show in Cleveland. And so yeah, it was weird. We went out and then like Axl was kind of like making fun of them after the show. It was very weird. But I don't know why we were there. We somehow got free tickets and then we ended up backstage and then we were like, we're gonna wait for like GNR to walk past us and like literally we're waiting and then they were like, okay, everyone out of here.
Like yeah, we were so excited.
Vanessa, were you into like Jimmy Eat World and that kind of like the Midwest emo stuff?
Got some stories about that. Jonah. You know, Jonah, one of his first, I mean, he can speak to this, but one of his first big jobs was he got to go to Europe and interview Jimmy Eat World, like when he was still in college. So we were very pro Jimmy Eat World family. And one time they came to, when I was going to school in Philadelphia, they were playing in Philadelphia and Jonah came in town and we went and saw them play. And then we got to hang out with them at this like pizza place after. And I remember it was like the first time I'd gotten to hang out with like a cool band like that with Jonah. And it was so cool. And then when I studied abroad, like the next year or something in Paris for a semester, they played in Paris and I went to their concert with a couple friends and I stayed till the end to meet them. For some reason, I was like, yeah, I'm Jonah's sister. I've met them before. I can meet them again. And they were like kicking everybody out. But I was like, no, I know them. It's honestly, my level of confidence is like shocking in retrospect. But I was like, no, I know them. And then what's so crazy is that when I was that age, I used to always be like, do you know my brother, Jonah? Like he's in the music scene. And people would be like, I don't think so. But Jonah he like knew so many people. Anyway, Midtown was opening for them in Paris. And I didn't think to ask them if they knew Jonah, but they did. That would have been a time that it worked. But anyway, I stayed, my friends and I stayed, and somehow I talked my way into meeting them after. And then like, I met them after and they were like, and I was like, I'm Jonah's sister. And they were like, oh, like, you know, like, nice to meet you. And I was like, yeah, like Jonah's my brother or whatever. You know, I think they were being so nice in retrospect. And the one thing I remember, which I think I've told you, Jonah, is I think it was their drummer just had a baby. And I go, And I knew that from you, Jonah, I guess. And I go, I heard you just had a baby. And he was like, yeah. Like, he thought I was going to like make fun of him or something. And it was such a weird reaction to saying that. And I was like, congrats. And he was like, oh, thank you so much. Like, I remember that was like the one interaction that I remember because it was so bizarre. But I just, I don't know what he was expecting me to say. Like, if someone had just done something that made him think that I would like be like, having babies sucks or
you
something.
Fucking loser. Wear a condom.
Yeah. You're supposed to be in a band right now. You're not supposed to have a baby with your wife. So I feel like anyway, but so quite a history with Jimmy Eat World and the Bayer family.
There are two Integrity concerts that are legendary, especially at that time to me. Number one, were you guys at that Warped Tour when Integrity played? That's on the back of...
No, I remember that one. That I believe that was at Nautica too, where that Green Day show was, and I think that was the first year. And I heard about it, but ended up not going.
That photo is cooler than any experience I ever had of the Warped Tour. Like,
yeah,
like I don't know how.
Yeah.
I don't know how they made that happen there, because that definitely was never the vibe when I was there. Number two, the Riot show, the Integrity Riot, One Life Crew Riot show, that is another one that was infamous up here.
Yeah. No, I wasn't at those. I think all that stuff was a little before my time. I feel like I got into Integrity kind of towards like the tail end of like the Melnick era. So like I remember seeing them at Peabody's with like Warzone or something at some point, and like a five band bill. But I was seeing a lot of the Victory bands of that era and like Bloodlet and like that kind of stuff. But I kind of missed like that kind of vintage Integrity, I think, by a couple years.
What were those shows like at that point in Cleveland? Like, were they crazy? Were like Warzone, Integrity, like that show now would be legendary. But at the time, was it like, because it feels like Cleveland and Integrity, there's like a weird relationship at different times between Integrity and the scene.
Yeah. I mean, I did a senior project in high school at this record store called Ultrasound Records, and the owner, Gary, was good friends with Dwid. And so Dwid would like come in. It's funny. I actually have it when I went home last time. I made this like bulletin board with like photos. And there's a photo of like, I'll have to say some of these photos. There's a photo of like Mike and Nate Jockum. They're like 15 years old, who are later Integrity, obviously. There's like a photo of Dwid wearing like a Hawaiian shirt. He was in this like whole like Don Ho era where he was like, I'll trade all my rare records. Do you remember this? I don't know.
Yes, there was an ad in the back of Integrity magazine or Victory magazine that was like, if you want a lyric sheet for Season of the Size of Days, please send Hawaii Don Ho memorabilia to
yeah.
Dwid.
So I worked at the store and all these people would come in and I like basically worked there for free like the last like month of my senior year of high school. But like those kind of shows, like I was, you know, I don't remember them being like especially violent. Like I did a semester of school when I was 17 at Berkeley. I did like a 5-week program. I remember seeing like, you know, In My Eyes, Tender Heart Fight, like a lot of like the heavier stuff. And I felt like those shows, like they had to keep stopping them like for fights. I don't feel like that really happened in Cleveland. But you know, I don't know. I was just like, tried to stay away from that stuff because I was like a little guy too, so I was kind of like in the back, but I don't remember it being like super violent, but I remember there being really good bills, you know. But I was more in the suburbs. Like we grew up next to Ascension, and so I would go see like Ascension and Catharsis and all these kind of bands in like basements and stuff.
It's we grew up near what
we grew up near Ascension. Remember Craig, who is in the Love Kill with me?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a drummer for Ascension. Yeah.
Okay. Didn't he have a band called like Teddy Bears too or something?
He was in a band called Bears, yes.
Okay. So that's cool. Altered the name a little bit. But
it's funny that Catharsis did kind of cross over to that Integrity scene. Like there is, you know, there's that Area 51 comp, I think, or like that.
Yep.
That zine that they did, right? Which had like, God, now I'm blanking on the zine. I feel like my Cleveland knowledge is escaping me right now when I need it most.
There was a blood book, right?
Blood Book. There was Blood Book. There was Die Hard fanzine. There was, oh, but there's this the one that was done by the guy from Catharsis, and they had a CD compilation, I remember, with it that had OLC on it and had like Integrity on it and.
Okay, yeah, this is so. I remember as Catharsis played in Matt. Matt later went on to form Chimera, Matt DeVries, but they played Ascension and Catharsis played in his parents' basement. And my friend Dan really wanted to go to the show, but his brother was on AOL and the dial-up modem, and I couldn't get through to him to tell him about the show, and he missed it, and he was so mad at his brother. I was like, I saw the awesomest show last night, dude. I tried calling you, but it gets getting the busy line. He's like, oh, my brother was on AOL.
That's so such a sign of those times. That's so crazy. You know what else I was thinking, not to change the subject, is like of all these bands, like Jonah used to take me to see all these different like musicians and bands and stuff. And I can think of the top of my head of two times that I like took naps at their houses. Like I feel like remember we went to see the Pink Spiders or something? You took me to like a party or something at their house and I took a nap. And then I took a
And then
nap
you
at
took a
Jeff
nap at Jeff
Rosenstock's.
Rosenstock's house. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I was like, hey,
I was
this is my
always
sister. She's
napping.
really tired. Can she sleep? And they're like, I guess. Yeah.
But it's a house show, right? So if you can't sleep at a house show, where can
Yeah.
you
So
sleep?
guess what? If it's at your house, I gotta keep you comfortable. I gotta take a nap.
That's how you know you've really successfully created a welcoming environment for patrons at your house show when
Yeah. Yes.
they feel like they can go to sleep at the show.
When I go to a show, I go, is it comfortable? Do I want to take a nap here? If not, I'm getting out of here.
My years ago, I got back from shooting this thing in the Congo and then flew back home, and then my wife made me go and see Raina Maria play a show down the street from my house. Couldn't have been more than 50 people at the show, and we sat down at a table, and I fell asleep
Oh, wow.
in the show. And there's no way they couldn't help but see me because I'm like one of the only people there, slumped
Oh
over at
man,
the table.
that is the worst at a small show. Even I've been at plays where I've done that, where I've been sitting in the front and I'm so tired, and you just are like, these people, like you kind of wake yourself up and then you're like, these people definitely saw that I was sleeping. There's just no way they could have missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I took my youngest child the other week to see the poor choice on my part as a parent, but to see the new Wolverine Deadpool movie. At
Oh.
multiple to times, I was woken up by them being like, "You gotta stop falling asleep. You're snoring."
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, Camden. I'm so sorry.
Oh man.
It's hard. It's hard to stay awake sometimes,
It's
right?
hard to
Like.
stay
Especially
awake.
in
Yeah.
movies, it's so dark.
Yeah.
Especially. That's why I think at a show, it's better that you ask if you can go to sleep rather than go downstairs and just fall
Yeah.
asleep in the middle of the show.
Well, that was a hard thing about going to Jonah's shows always when he was in different bands, is a lot of times they were like standing room only. You
Not
had
a
to
lot of
stand.
theater shows, yeah.
And that is hard. It's so hard. It's a thing. It's a lot of concerts are like that. You got to stand, and that's tough for
Yeah.
me because
I
I
think Damien
love to
knows,
sit.
yeah.
Oh, I
Yeah.
definitely. I'm
Are
definitely
you
not a
aware?
the I'm not a theater performing artist. I am definitely a small room artist, to say the least.
Oh, yeah,
Which
it's
you require a lot from the fans at that point because there's not that many of them. So you need all their energy. You need people. People can't be upstairs
You
sleeping on
need
a
people to
couch.
be like, you don't want the me's of the audience who are going, is there a chair anywhere?
No.
Yeah.
Actually, my wife and I went and saw Grade, who Jonah, you wrote liner notes for,
Yes.
do a surprise reunion show one time, and it was so secret and such a well-kept surprise that there were only 15 people there. But my wife was able to breastfeed our then newborn child and sing along in the front row. It
Wow.
had a safety pr ear protection thing on the baby,
Yeah.
so it wasn't like exposed to
Yeah.
the loud
Those, by
music.
the way, those ear protection headphones for babies are so cute.
Yeah, they're very cute. They were invented for guns. Really?
Oh.
Yeah, it was like for parents that want to take their kids hunting, I guess, or maybe NASCAR
I guess
too.
that makes sense. It's like it feels safer to, yeah, to take your kid to a concert than taking them.
I remember seeing, Grade a lot in like the late 90s, early 2000s, like the Separate the Magnet era. And it seemed like they were such a, like in Detroit, Cleveland, so it seemed like they were such a huge band in Canada. Was that, I mean, what was it like?
Yeah, were they kind of the equivalent of Toad the Red Sprocket here?
They were our fastball.
Yeah.
They were never nearly as popular here as they were in the States.
Really?
Like, I think America, like Canada constantly needs America to tell us that something's good before we like it here. Drake is a great example of that, I think.
Sure.
My band as well, like we really didn't get written up here until we got written up in over in England. And Grade was kind of, I think even proto that whole like early 2000s sort of like indie media boom. So they didn't really get any sort of mainstream coverage. Like Grade shows were pretty small back then in Toronto.
Yeah, it's interesting because like you listen to like And Such Is Progress, and it's so interesting because like Kyle's so screamy, and then some of the music is so kind of delicate, and then kind of like alternating. But it's such like a unique sound to me. It's like so far ahead of so much of the stuff that was like popular like 10 years later.
Yeah, they really, like I always say, they kind of invented that style too, like that
Yeah.
real completely contrasting, like yeah, like saccharine poppy with just completely discordant hardcore. And I remember Rise Against would covering them one time during a sound check when they were up here. And so there are some bands that kind of like, pay it to Grade, but I don't think Grade really gets given that sort of due in terms
No.
of kind of pioneering that thing. Which, I remember the first time I saw him, I was like, this is the most insane thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, I was just like, this, I can't. I saw them open for Propagandhi, I think it was the first time I ever saw him. And it was just like, what the hell is this? And now, God, it's almost like a mainstream kind of sound.
Yeah, it
What do they
really
sound
is.
like?
It's like Jimmy World mixed with Integrity.
It's yeah. I saw them a few times on Separate the Max tour, and they were touring with Hot Water, who was touring on Forever and Counting, and it's just like unreal.
Yeah, Grade, when they first started, they were like an Integrity worship band. Like the
Really?
first couple demos were complete sort of like Integrity kind of metallic hardcore. And then they gradually started introducing more and more, so that Greg doing the poppy vocals. And have you
Yep.
ever heard Greg have that other band, Jersey,
Jersey.
the ska punk band?
Yeah, I saw them once. I think I saw them once with like the Enkindles or something. Yeah.
That definitely was, they were a band that I think got a lot more sort of mainstream attention up here,
Yeah.
like mainstream radio play. Well, I guess ska is like a little more commercial of a genre.
Yeah, that's true.
I think everyone had their, it's funny with my kids now, like looking at them and being like, oh yeah, ska like just hits with kids. Like,
Oh, it's so fun.
so fun. It's like you dance to
Yes.
it, you know?
I was going to ask you guys, like, I have a hard time enjoying like really hardcore music because it feels sort of like unsettling. But I guess it's like you don't listen to it all the time. Like if you want to feel more chill, you could listen to like Wilco or like you could listen to like I don't know. I never quite. And this is no diss to either of your bands. I've been to many United Nations shows, had a great time, but so I'll pick on Jonah's band kind of more. Like for example, like I wouldn't hop in the car and go like, oh, all right, it's been a long day. I'm gonna pop in some United Nations. You know what I mean? Like I guess what I'm saying is I've never for being fully related to Jonah and having like similar views on a lot of things, whatever. I never quite have been able to, and I'm sure this doesn't come up a ton on your podcast,
It's come
but
up.
I've never been quite able to like get it with with some of this harder, even some punk music. I get it, you know, like it's kind of fun, but not that music always has to be fun. You know, it can be, you know, it can be sad or whatever. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think because you're well adjusted, maybe, and maybe Jonah. I don't know what happened to you, Jonah, but you're like me and just not well adjusted in that way. Because there is something that. Yeah, just, I don't know, like, I would, after a hard day, want to listen to something crazy. Like, I would want to listen to, like, United
Nations.
Yeah,
it feels like a release or something, maybe.
Absolutely, yeah. And to be fair, like, Wilco came out of punk, too. So,
yeah, okay.
Wilco, I find most of the stuff I like, even unconsciously, like, will wind up being somehow connected to punk. Like, years later, I'll be like, oh, you were in a punk band. Or, you know, like, John Cougar Mellencamp, I just learned, put out an early 7-inch on Gulcher Records, home of the Gizmos, like one of the first punk bands. And then he was like totally involved in like early punk stuff way back when. I'm like, yeah. Oh, is that a soft spot for John Cougar Mellencamp? And I guess that's where it comes from.
That's probably where it comes from. Yeah. Well, also to what you were saying about being well adjusted, like I weirdly, randomly met Jeff Rosenstock's sister, and we were like, we would like hang out sometimes. We talked about working together. We really got along. It took us such a long time to figure out. One day I was like, your last name's Rosenstock. I was like, are you related to Jeff Rosenstock? And she was like, yeah, that's my brother. And we talked about how our brothers are really nice, but they're in these bands that make them sound sort of like angry, but that maybe the reason that they're able to be such like nice, kind of like emotionally mature people is because they have this outlet. You know what I mean? Whereas like if you were, you know, and this is no burn to Fastball, but like if you were in Fastball, maybe you're kind of more like you're
road
still working
raging.
It out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's like, you know, for me, I like listening to heavy music too. I don't listen to it all the time, but you know, the only time it's tough for me, and Damien's probably same for you, is like if it's like a festival and it's just like all heavy bands, that can be a lot. But I think it can be cathartic to listen to and to play. But you know, to Vanessa also will be like, oh, we'll be talking. She'll be like, oh, I was hanging out with Fred, and she's like, oh yeah, we hung out with like Steve Jones, and I'm just like, yeah. What? And she's like, yeah, Steve, I think he was in the Sex Pistols. Like, we went to some art gallery. I'm just like, it's like, I feel like Vanessa has these run-ins with some of these, like, legendary punk people, but doesn't really, she understands it, but, like, she tells me later, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I'm able to, like, keep my cool more because I don't appreciate it as much as I should.
Yes.
Yeah, you're not going to start talking about the Professionals or the Lightning Raiders for an hour and a half like I probably would. There's a reason Fred does... definitely does not bring Steve Jones around me. yeah, I'm good at Steve. Don't, you don't want to fuck with this one. This one's a little nuts. But I think that's like one of the great things is that, you know, like you're able to kind of have these moments with these people and not necessarily, you know, force them to relive in this like brief moment of their childhood. Like that's what I realize this podcast is all about, fixating on like, a 5-year span generally in someone's life. And like a lot of times people are like, yeah, I'm a lot more than those 5 years.
That's what our podcast is all about. Nostalgia. We can't like get away from it. Like Jonah will text me like, do you remember this like remember one time we were talking about King's Quest or something, that computer game, like we will just both go into these deep rabbit holes about nostalgic stuff. There's something is so I'll talk about nostalgic stuff forever.
I think we're at the best point for youth culture. Like it was because it was like still like people making new IPs, I guess. Like it was like there was new things kind of coming out, new technologies with video games. Like I look at a lot of the stuff my kids are into and it's just rehashed stuff from my childhood a lot of times.
Right.
Like minus Minecraft. And I guess that's why kids have things like Mr. Beast and Minecraft and things that make no sense to me at all, because you know, they're going to have something that's different than all the stuff that we just had as kids.
Right.
Yeah, I remember being in college and just watching me and my roommates that like VHS tape of like CKY 2K and just watching it over and over and over.
And Jonah, yeah. You had like a Pennywise VHS tape that.
Yeah, I had the Pennywise Breakfast of Champions. I think I had the NoFX one, 10 years.
10 years
I
of fucking up.
10 years of fucking up. I had that. Yeah, I just had like a rotation of like 5 VHS tapes. And you just watch them over and over and over.
I used to rent the Paula Abdul VHS tape from the library where she's like audition. She's rehearsing for the Forever Your Girl tour. And I remember seeing her filming the music video for Forever Your Girl. And it was like all these kids were in it. And I was like, God, I wish I could have auditioned for that. I wish I could have been in that video with her.
Too bad you missed that audition.
I know. I was like, where would I have needed to be? Like, she probably wasn't in Ohio.
Probably not,
But yeah, those VHS tapes of music and musicians were really, because you got BTS, you know, access.
I used to, you remember that Scholastic ordering thing you get at
Yes,
school?
I'd say we've covered this quite a lot, and it still exists.
Do you remember Starlog? Was it Starlog magazine? They had a magazine that they would put out. And it was like basically just full page glossy photos of different people. But I remember specifically buying the Paula Abdul issue, being like, this is the most beautiful person I've ever seen in my life.
That's so sweet.
I just was like 8 years old, being like, I could not believe it. Like being like, Mom, we need to order this from this issue of Scholastic. Because this is the most beautiful person I've ever seen in my whole life.
Oh, my gosh. Before, Damon, I wanted to say, I didn't want to forget to say this, but, you know, I've been really conscious about not turning our podcast into Turned Out a Punk because there's been, like, opportunities. But we did have one moment where we were in L.A. We had Will Ferrell on the podcast, and he was talking about going to school with some of the Rage guys, with Zach and some of the guys, and, like, he was friends with them in high school. And I asked him, I was like, Will, did you ever see Inside Out? And he said no. But I was like, I gotta ask Will if he ever saw Inside Out. There was that, and I asked Weird Al if he ever saw Black Flag. He said no, but he knew of them.
Oh, that's amazing. I gotta listen to Will Ferrell one. I did not know they went to, like, anytime you guys have anyone that's remotely connected to punk, I will crib the episode just in case there's anything that I'm like, oh, I didn't know they were into punk. But
yeah.
Will
yeah.
was someone I did not even guess had a connection to Rage Against the Machine.
And he said like his first season on SNL, like they played, like Rage played or something, and they like hung out and they like were kind of friends, and they were like, isn't Wild World here? And like, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
This is so funny because I remember so much of that podcast because it was so funny and he was so great, and I don't even remember that.
Yeah, in my mind I'm like, should I ask about Inside Out or Hard Stance or what, you know, like, yeah.
Well, that Rage performance is one of the most infamous in Saturday Night Live's history because they didn't get a second song.
Whoa.
Oh, right.
They got thrown out before they could do the second number. And
that's so, yeah.
I wonder if Will just pretended not to know him after that. Like, I don't know. Who the fuck were those guys? Get them out of here.
By the way, that's every cast member's dream because more sketches get in. I remember Kanye left once. And he was mad about something and he left after his first song. I think it's because they, it was something with the way that he was like decorating the stage and they wanted to change it because the camera guys were having, I don't even remember, it was some kind of issue with it. And so they tried to change it and then he came back and, you know, he was like not happy that it had changed and he was going to leave. And I remember it's like, you know, everyone's like, no, we can't leave. And like a lot of us cast members were like, but if he leaves, maybe my sketch will get on. You know, like it's just a little bit, that little bit of extra time.
I remember when Kanye was on and then they went to the goodnights and he like went up to you and he was saying something, like he was saying something in your ear. And I was like, after, I was like, Vanessa, what was he saying? Like, I can never tell.
That was
tell
my
people
second show. And I'll tell you what I think he was saying.
Okay.
First of all, that was the coolest. I mean, at the time, you know, he had a little bit of a different kind of
energy.
Okay. Yes.
Energy than he does now. But I think what he said to me is that we were both wearing red. I was wearing a red dress and he was wearing an all red outfit. And I think he just said something like, you know, great show. We're both wearing red or something.
Cool. All right.
Actually, I don't know for a fact, but I remember like that being a thing that we kind of discussed. So that's what I think it was.
Gotcha.
And also totally different, but just on the The person, one of the people I was the most starstruck by my whole time at SNL was Eminem.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe, like, I was like, I wanted to do sketches with him and stuff. That wasn't going to happen. But he helped me off the stage. Like, he stepped off the stage after good nights, after the good night hugs and stuff. And he was like, "You need a hand, sweetheart?" And I was like, "Yes." He took my hand and helped me off stage. And I was like, "Okay, I guess I'm dating Eminem."
Dave, there's got to be an Eminem. D12, I think, played Warped Tour, right? I think that's...
D12 did play Warped Tour. And there is kind of a connection, I guess, because Insane Clown Posse, who they had beef with, had some punk connection, because Insane Clown Posse's first show ever was opening for Cold as Life, but they insisted that they should headline over Cold as Life. And Vanessa, I don't know if you know Cold as Life, but they are the scariest band.
I don't know them, but I have met Insane Clown Posse.
I think Insane Clown Posse, I would be interested to hear what their memories are of Cold as Life, because I didn't think it ended very well for Insane Clown Posse.
Real life scary?
Very, very much real life scary. Like, most of the members have been incarcerated or are dead at this point of the band. Like, a lot of scary stories.
Well, you know, it was interesting. So Mike O'Brien, who's this really funny comedian who wrote and was on SNL for a little, and I knew him from Chicago. He's like one of the funniest people in the Chicago comedy scene. And still he's so funny. Jonah knows him. He's a friend of ours. He used to write these sketches that were like, they were like these pre-tape videos that were like sort of, they were related to the Insane Clown Posse. What was the Insane Clown Posse's like festival? The festival of like juggalos or whatever? Gathering of juggalos. So he would write these pre-tape sketches that were like about, they were like parodying that in some way. And Insane Clown Posse really liked it. So they invited him and to come with a bunch of friends to one of their shows. So I went, and it was so crazy because it was like, they were throwing like soda from the stage, like Fanta or something. There's some brand of soda. Yeah, they were throwing it from the stage, and it would like hit you even if you were sitting in the back, even if you're standing in the back of this like huge venue. And we realized, and it looked so crazy inside. It looked really scary because all of the walls were covered in garbage bags, which we realized was because they were throwing the soda to protect the walls. But then afterwards, we got to meet them. We got to go backstage and meet them, and they were so nice. They were like, "Oh, it's so cool to meet you guys." Like, and like, it was the weirdest night, because it was just like, I immediately was so freaked out by the whole like venue, and like the people were like so like hyped up and like, you know, whatever. And then meeting them, they were just like the sweetest guys, you know, had the full faces of makeup on, but were like, couldn't have been nicer.
My favorite things that you did was the Michael Imperioli episode where you asked him about James Gandolfini listening to Green Day in the trailer. It's like, the fact that you were able to get him on to ask that, it was like, I can't explain to you how much that like meant to me. I was like, oh my gosh.
Wow. He's listening to Green Day in the Sopranos trailer?
James Gandolfini was a massive, I guess, vinyl record fan, and had like a turntable put into his trailer. And this is pre-vinyl like resurgence, right? And bought Green Day Dookie on vinyl, I guess, shortly after it came out. And he was playing it in the trailer with Michael, like listening to Green Day.
And how do you know that?
I think there, he kind of like, when Michael got on social media, he was doing a lot of Q&As, and he kind of was talking about how James was into music, and people were like, "Oh, what kind of music do you like?" And he's like, "I don't know, like Green Day." And people were like blown away by this. And then I went, 2 years I did it, but the second year I did the Dinosaur Jr. summer camp, Michael was up there kind of doing like a live reading from his book and just sort of hanging out. And so I got to meet him up there and hang out a little bit. And let me tell you, watching John Brannon from Negative Approach talking to Michael Imperioli was one of the greatest things I've ever gotten to witness.
Wow.
John had been up for about 48 hours straight by that point, too.
Incredible.
That's the best thing about this is because like it connects so many people. Like it's just such a like a weird thing, and there's only like a handful of us at a lot of these shows. You know, they're happening in people's basements,
Right.
but all these people wind up doing the weirdest, most interesting things, and it really does constantly attract people that will wind up doing cool, creative jobs later in life.
Yeah.
Like I'm just, you know, never not shocked, you know, that there's like,
Yeah.
oh yeah, like there's like, you know, like NOFX, you know, a huge band, right? Like a very, very heavily influenced by Rich Kids on LSD. RKL, they will admit, is their biggest influence. Josh Brolin was in the pre-Rich Kids on LSD band as the drummer.
Wow.
So Josh Brolin kind of influences NOFX in a roundabout way.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you always hear about that kind of like Eric Wareheim with Ink and Dagger. I mean, yeah, there are so many of these crossovers for sure.
Did you ever see Ink and Dagger back then?
I did. I saw them on the Fine Art Original Sin tour a few times. They actually played a show when I was in college. I went to Ithaca College. They played at this guy John Ziga's house, and it got the cops came, and then it got moved to a little house on campus. I saw him play like a house show. I have photos, and then I think I saw him play in Buffalo with Elliot or something. I saw them probably like two or three times.
At the time, I thought that was the dumbest shit. I'm like, vampires are dressing like fucking vampires. That's some dork shit. Now, and even like a few years later, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I missed that.
Yeah, they had such an interesting sound, and I think like I might have seen them. I saw them with, I can't remember who I saw them with, but yeah, I think that Don had, because Don was in Sick Feeling, Don DeVore, who we to United Nations toured with because they were on Jeff's label, and yeah, he did something in Ink Dagger where he had a, like a slight delay on one amp and then another amp, so it sounded like two guitars. I feel like they were just like had a really innovative sound and were just, yeah, just an incredible band.
I've only been to one Saturday Night Live party, like those after parties that you guys would go to those restaurants, and it was like at Bobby
Yeah.
Flay's restaurant.
Okay.
And it was Arcade Fire had played, and it was when the Arcade Fire did a special afterwards. It was like 30 minutes that Eric Wareheim had directed. And
Oh.
remember Saturday Night Live had an add-on for like an extra half hour
I
that night.
remember them playing at the end of the show and then us going and like they kept performing and we kind of went and joined them for a little. Like they kept performing like past the end of the show.
Yeah, and they broadcast that, and I think
Oh, I didn't.
afterwards there was a party at Bar America. Maybe that was called Bar in Barbie Flay's restaurant.
Okay, maybe, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I kind of remember that, but they played the show so many times while I was there. Like I want to say like five times or something over the 7 years I was there. Yeah. But I remember when they kept playing. I don't have a great memory of like didn't remember that they did that they broadcast it and all that stuff.
It was like a weird overrun. Like I think it went on till like an extra half hour that night,
Yeah.
and then we all went to this party. And I walked in, and there's first thing I see is Eric Wareheim, and I'm like, "Oh my God, Ink and Dagger, what up, buddy?" And just start talking to him about Eric Wareheim. And then I'm walking around, and the guy I feel embarrassed. I'm blanking on his name. The guy who directed Scott Pilgrim, what's his British director, directed that movie Drive to not Drive, the one Baby Driver.
Oh, I know who you mean.
I feel
Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright. Edgar,
Yes.
so Edgar Wright, he's like, hey, and he says hello, and I don't really know him, but he invites me to come sit down with him. So I sit down with Edgar Wright, and then I'm talking to him. And I'm like, oh my God, Eric Wareheim's here. Did you ever hear his band? And he's like, no, what's his band? I'm like, Ink and Dagger. And he's like, what do they sound like? And I'm like, they sound like Minor Threat if Minor Threat did drugs. At which point, this guy emerges from the shadows and he's like, did you just say Minor Threat on drugs? And I'm like, yeah. And I look up and it's Paul Rudd. And I'm like, do you even know who the fuck Minor Threat is? He's like, oh yeah, but they don't do drugs. And I'm like, yeah, that's why this band sounds extra weird.
By the way, just gotta say, one of my favorite hosts, Paul Rudd is so cool. He knows everything and he's so nice and he's so funny.
He does
he
seem
used
that.
To be a bar mitzvah DJ. He's told us such crazy stories, and he is so, he's like so funny.
And handsome. He's like really
it's
arresting.
Crazy. It's crazy because he's so handsome, you would think he wouldn't be so like talented and so funny. Because you would think, you know,
he could get away with
he's,
it.
He's just he's so cool. Like that doesn't surprise me because I feel like he's so cool. He would know that.
It was very weird. It was so cool. It was a very, very weird night all around. Like the whole thing was just very,
what's so funny. What was so funny about those parties always was like a lot of them were like us eating dinner because it's like you're so hungry at the end of the show. And you go to this restaurant and there is like a kind of a sceney area in the front where there's like a bar and whatever at most of the parties. But then in the back are these tables that are like reserved for the cast and the writers. And you'd think that that area would be cooler, but that area is just where everyone's eating dinner.
Yeah.
And by the way, dinner that, you know, we have to pay for drinks that we have to pay for ourselves. That's
it's not comped.
No.
That's the biggest shock to people and was a big shock to me is that your food and drinks at that party are not, you know, they're not comped. You have to pay for them unless you're like with
only
an agent or with
someone. I think on the finale, the last one usually. Yeah.
The finale, that episode, it's always like a party at Rockefeller Center and that it's catered and the food is free. But whenever you go to a restaurant, it's not free.
So
it's crazy. But it also kind of makes sense if you think about like how expensive that would be for them to like host a party and pay for everybody and everybody's friends every week. I don't know. It's NBC. They can afford it. What am I saying?
I like maybe just move to like a slightly cheaper restaurant. Like maybe there's like the Sbarro's. Maybe they're there.
Yeah. I think they had to like bring in a different staff because it wouldn't start till like 2 a.m. or something. Yeah. So I think they would almost like bring different staffs into these restaurants who didn't normally work there for like 5 hours or something. Yeah.
But how does that work? Like at the end of the night, it's like, Paul, you had the nachos, you had the like,
it's, you know, if you're at a little table, your table gets charged. You know, sometimes people would leave. There would be certain like, you know, like hangers on agents.
Our dad once had to pay for some guy's expensive whiskey drink and he still talks about it. He was there.
He was there with
the American Hi-Fi guys were there. Cause I was friends with, they were Miley Cyrus's band.
Right. And I was going to say, I thought it was someone from Miley Cyrus's band.
Yeah. And some guy not one of the American Hi-Fi guys, another guy was with them and like bought some drink. My dad's like, I had to buy a drink for this guy.
Sometimes that would happen.
That could happen. That kind of stuff could happen all the time. You gotta be careful. You know, Damon, I don't know if you know this. The Arcade Fire, to bring it back around, Will Butler, his first solo show was opening for United Nations at Rock and Roll Hotel in DC. I found it on Stereo Gum, 2014. He was like, I think we played with his band Black Clouds, but he, who are our friends, but yeah, he played like first, like a solo set.
Well, cause him and his brother aren't necessarily from the punk thing, but the rest of the guys in the band, like Richard, Jeremy, Tim, were all like Ottawa hardcore kids. And
really?
Yeah, like they would go play shows and go to shows at 5 Arlington, Sean Scallon's place.
Okay.
This has been amazing, and I would punish you both forever and ever if you would let me, and I could talk to you way more, and if either of you want to come back here anytime, you're both welcome forever.
Incredible. Well, yes, we got to do a part 2, a part 3.
We got to do a part 2. Yes.
Well, if you ever want me to come on your show,
we would love that. And just to plug it really quickly, if that's.
I do a plug at the beginning, so I don't want to force you to have to, but you can.
Oh, should we not do our plug?
No, you can. I just feel like sometimes I'm not good people at plugging my own shit, so I want to.
Yeah. Oh, I'm great at it.
Okay, if you are, you're much more of a pro than I am at this kind of thing. So.
Jonah and I have a brother-sister podcast called How Did We Get Weird? We'll have to have you on. And we talk about nostalgic stuff. I kind of referenced it earlier. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And I would say it's a companion podcast to this one in that, as we talked about earlier, kind of a lot of nostalgic stuff.
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, it's a great podcast, and I think having both of you on together, it's been amazing because I have stared at that picture of both of you in raver pants when you were teenagers many, many times over the years while editing together videos, or just thinking, oh yeah, this is the connection between Committed and Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I mean we're so connected to Committed.
Very, very committed to Committed.
We
I and
made our
what
mark with pride.
I don't think there's I love that. But yeah, this has been amazing. And anytime you guys want to be here, you're always welcome.
Thank you so
Thank you
much.
so
This
much,
is
Damien.
really fun. This is
Yes.
so fun.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.